There are four psukim in Parshas Chukas which seem very extraneous. Torah doesn't waste its words. It's very economizing of text. And there are four words describing a major war which was fought between Moab and Sichon. And it appeared as if Moab was the favorite entering this war. They were fortressed and heavily armed, surrounding the city of Cheshbon, which was the metropolis. But a fire and a conflagration, metaphorically, consumed Cheshbon and consumed and devoured all the surrounding cities and satellites and led to a catastrophe and a disaster for Moab. Many of her citizens were taken as refugees or as slaves by Sichon Melech Amori, and they lost major, major territory. So this was not a local private skirmish. This was a major, major political event and, of course, military encounter. Now, why does the Torah include these psukim? So at a very, very practical level, because the psukim immediately before describe the war between the Jewish people and Sichon Melech Amori, who resided in these areas that he had captured from Moab on the east bank of the Jordan River. Now, when the Jewish people defeated Sichon, they received much of this territory that Sichon had captured from Moab. And it was instrumental to the Jewish arrival, because had these countries and territories remained under the monarchy or under the control of Moab, they would have been off limits, because the Jewish people were not allowed to engage in any hostilities towards the descendants of their long-lost cousin Lot, Moab, for various reasons. So this war was actually very favorable to the Jewish people in that it rerouted lands that were out of bounds, that were disqualified for Jewish settlement, and it rerouted them to Melech Amori, Sichon, and now the war fought with Sichon, which of course was in many respects a war imposed upon us because we had asked Sichon for safe passage and for peaceful engagements, and he collects all of his armies and he launches a war against the Jewish people, which leads to his rapid defeat. But the psukim are very expansive. They describe the details, as I mentioned before, of where the war between Sichon and Moab occurred, the cities that were involved, the gatherings of leaders for the summit meeting, possibly predating the war, during the war, the fire that emerges from Cheshbon. I'll just read the psukim. They're familiar to some, beginning with Parak Pasach Chavzayin, Al Kain Yamra Moshlim Bo Cheshbon. The leaders gather in Cheshbon. Tibonev Tikonein Ir Sichon. Maybe this sounds like a summit meeting after the war, now that Cheshbon has been reestablished as the city of Sichon for a brief time before the Jewish people captured it. Ki Esh Yatza Mi Cheshbon. A fire emerged from Cheshbon. Lehavam Mi Kiryat Sichon. A flame from the city of Sichon, it's now a city of Sichon, Achla Ar Moav, it consumed Moav, Balei Bamos Arnon, the surrounding mountains, Oilecha Moav, lamenting, woe is to you, Moav, Avadatam Kemosh, you've lost your people, Nasan Banav Pleitim, your sons are now refugees, Uvenosav Bashvis, and your daughters are slaves, Lamelech Amorich Sichon, Vaniram Avad Cheshbon, and your monarchy lost Cheshbon, Adivon, Vanashim Adnofach, Asher Admeva, other towns, or other areas that were lost and destroyed. These details seem to be irrelevant to Jewish history, which essentially is the target of Tanakh, and certainly the target of Sefer Bamidbar. And it's one thing to tell us the details, is another thing, or the generalities, is another thing to be so detailed in this description. And I've spoken about this in other contexts, famous statement of the Gemara in Bava Basra, that this is a moral gloss, or almost a satire, that the real control is not exerted by politicians and chieftains, but by people of strong moral will. But I think there's a different message here as well. In a general sense, obviously it's a larger conversation, a Jew has to identify and appreciate the overlap between the national, narrow Jewish trajectory and the universalist trajectory. And at an existential level, a Jew has to feel that he's involved in national, parochial Jewish experiences, whether it be ritual or whether it be national living in Israel and advancing Israel, but that is on behalf of a larger universalist image or vision of ushering in a world of Hashem that will lead to universal welfare for each human being on their terms, not by converting to Judaism, but by improving their lives as non-Jews. And I think for a lot of people, the ability to merge these two identities is still very challenging, and some people migrate towards one at the cost of the other. They become hyper-nationalistic or hyper-universalistic, and those two ultimately emerge sometimes in our world isn't yet ready to realize the congruence between the two. But not just from an existentialist standpoint, how I go about my own experiences and how I see the world around me, but also from a historical perspective. It's important to see events as possessing in a way that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can embed or program dual meanings. Namely, large historical events have meaning in and of themselves. Wars, political events, interactions between large groups of people. They have their own meaning, and they deliver to humanity their own values and consequences and effects. On the other hand, there's no question that at a macro level, the trajectory of history serves the Jewish arc, because by serving the Jewish arc, it also serves the universalist arc. And it's impossible for any human being to fully comprehend the overlap between those two trajectories, how major events in history were important for themselves, and they also served themselves by serving the Jewish process. But it's important that at least we realize those two realities in ways that only HaKadosh Baruch Hu can program, and that's why in many cases it lies beyond the ken and the comprehension of the human mind and the human imagination. But sometimes, again, our lopsidedness in this universalist-nationalist balance expresses itself in the ability to see one but not both of these arcs. So some people see every single event as solely important because it serves Jewish history. Some people are not willing to make that statement at all because they feel it's too parochial and even bigoted, rather than realizing the inherent universalism of a Jewish nationalist trajectory. So take, for example, the following mind experiment. I don't mean to say this simplistically, but just by way of opening our imagination. There probably are a lot of people listening to this year who are American or of American descent, or certainly have thought about how the events surrounding the United States of America, as well as Western Europe, over the last 200 years, how it has shaped humanity at large, from the American Revolution, the introduction of democracy, the two wars which were fought on behalf of freedom and democracy as opposed to fascism. And certainly that delivered certain foundations of experience for billions of people over the last 200 years. But it's also undeniable that at some level, the rise of America as a superpower has enabled, in many ways, the rise of the state of Israel, the modern state of Israel. And in a more specific way, without relating to World War II in particular, because the details of World War II as it affected, first of all, so much bloodshed, and particularly to the Jewish people, and it raises a very, very important question, but an autonomous question, of the relationship between the Holocaust and the state of Israel. But certainly, if we spare ourselves that challenging and complex analysis, it's easier to analyze World War I and the reshaping of classical boundaries along nationalist lines, and the way in which the war of nationalism reshaped the Middle East and directly led to the Balfour Declaration, and certainly created certain windows of opportunities for Jewish nationalism. So was World War I significant because of how it changed experience on behalf of humanity? Or was it important because it served the historical warrant of returning Jews to their land? And I think for many people, that mental experiment or that challenge seems off or too provocative. How could you shrink such a bloody and horrific war into a single variable trajectory of Jewish interests? And my point is, I'm not shrinking it. I think it has both. And even in serving Jewish interests, it serves a larger historical need, a universal need to advance human history in a way that advances Jewish history. But I think that's what's on display in Parshas Chukas. There are wars for it. And to the average bystander, these wars seem to deeply, deeply reshape the ancient east bank of the Jordan River. Large metropolises rose and fell. People gathered to process and to recover from the war. Okay, Yamra, Moshlim, Bo, Cheshbon, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of refugees and failed states, as we would say, homeless people. A lot of suffering, but also a lot of change. But the Torah is encasing this within the Jewish ark. And now the Jews have taken the East Bank and from Sichon, where they couldn't have settled these lands had these wars not been waged. However, the Torah is not ignoring the impact on a universal human level, because that's important, whatever it accomplished, not being historian of those wars, whatever it accomplished was important in and of itself. And for the Torah, this is a dual message. That as we process history, we should be able to align these two interests or agendas, excuse me, side by side, and not feel that one has to be appreciated or highlighted at the cost of the other.